But I think what differentiates me as a candidate most is that I'm really more focused on health and wealth. Focusing on healthcare, where I'm comfortable, it's where I retreat to when I want to have a conversation and not be wrong about anything, is healthcare is 40% of the state's budget, and healthcare is needlessly complicated, and it's a long on-ramp to learn the language of healthcare and how to make changes in healthcare, and I would need the shortest amount of time to get up to speed.
This is a real thing. Real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this. Stop this.
I've got plenty of time. I have nothing else going on today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. Right now.
What I think is affirming is just how positive it's been so far. Even with just all of us starting out, 12 days before the caucus night, we did all the rounds right there on caucus night. But when we got to the end at the Phoenix Theater, we all got a photo together, and I don't know if that happens very often.
Well, it is our first competitive race for House District 61A in 20 years. So who knows what's normal?
Right. No, it's been real friendly so far. That makes me happy. You see too many races that get kind of nasty.
This is the Wedge Live podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. Dylan McMahon, as we have alluded to, is running for Minnesota House in District 61A. Frank Hornstein is retiring after 20 years. Let's go. You work for United Healthcare, former chair of DFL Senate District 61. And my first question. Frank Hornstein is a public transit champion, chair of the Transportation Committee, helped pass that historic 3/4-cent metro sales tax last year, supporter of full-time bus lanes on Hennepin. Do you endorse the Frank Hornstein transportation agenda, public transit agenda? Are you going to continue that legacy?
Man, you're coming in hot. So I don't want to diminish any other or minimize any other topics. I have a lot to learn about transit. I fully admit I don't know enough, and I hope to learn more in this process. But as far as the Hennepin Avenue plan goes, I think that's kind of a done deal at this point, isn't it? It's already been discussed, planned, and now they're breaking ground on it.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned it as one of the things. It's not necessarily something you have, even if it wasn't a done deal. Can a state legislator affect that? No, but just trying to get a sense of you on transportation. So Frank Hornstein did write that letter in support of the full-time bus lanes to the city. And I'm just wondering, is that the kind of legislator you will be, that strong booster of public transit?
I don't know enough about public transit. I want to learn more. Would I be a strong supporter of other things that I know more things about, that I'm more informed on? Yeah, but at this point, I don't know enough about transit. I was at the two Saturdays ago, was it, with the Vibrant Lyndale and Livable Lyndale. I walked around there. I chatted with a couple people. I took literature from all the literature that was being passed out. But at this point, I'm just doing a whole lot of reading.
Okay. So healthcare, something you maybe know a little more about. You work for United Healthcare. Is there anything you have learned working in the health insurance industry that gives you an idea of the kind of things you'd like to do as a state legislator?
Yeah. So thanks for going somewhere I'm comfortable. So with state-based healthcare, medical assistance here, Medicaid nationwide, there are some really interesting things that have happened and can happen when you're using Medicaid dollars. So one of the ways, the main pathways that those things happen is through Section 1115 waivers. And it's basically saying, hey, CMS, national CMS, we want to use Medicaid dollars to do this new thing. A lot of things were tried during the public health emergency that for some reason just weren't made permanent or made permanent in states that aren't Minnesota. Specific example. In medical assistance, for instance, during the public health emergency, if your spouse had advanced dementia, you were allowed and paid for being their primary caretaker. makes sense, right? That's the person you spend the most time with. You're already living in the home. You don't have to pay for somebody else to come to the home to be the primary caretaker. After the public health emergency ended, they got rid of that, and only 9 states made it permanent. Minnesota is not one of those states. And so the way to make that permanent is through a Section 1115 waiver through the Human Services Finance Committee at the Capitol. So that's one example. That's an extreme example of something that Minnesota hasn't done, and that's something that I would support.
Let's talk about just general community leadership. You think of a time when you saw a problem in the community and you showed up, you took some action, you showed leadership to solve that problem.
Yeah. So with redistricting, Senate District 61 picked up Elliott Park from SD 59. And one of the first things I did is I listed all of the precincts by turnout data for the last couple election cycles. And so you can see that, like, there are sometimes just streets. Left side of the street has 70% turnout, right side of the street has 30% turnout. And that was kind of the case with Elliott Park. And so one of the concerted efforts I put forward was saying, hey, we need to have an event in Elliott Park. Not to say that SD 59 was not paying attention to them, but wanted to let them know that, hey, the DFL party is here. And, you know, a lot of things happened at the Capitol this last session. And we just wanted to share all the good things that happened. And so this last fall, I think it was fall, I was wearing shorts either way, we had a party with the DFL in Elliott Park. Had a whole bunch of tables, invited a bunch of people, got a lot of people on our email list. Keith Ellison was there. All the 3 electeds from SD 61 were there, invited a bunch of the city council candidates that were running last year. By all accounts, I think it was a pretty successful event.
Let's talk about education. I don't know if this is a scary topic for you. It's a scary topic for me. So go as deep or as not deep. I know it's the beginning of the campaign as you want, but sure. Can you define the problem with either the way we fund public education? Like what is going wrong? It feels like Minneapolis public schools may be in a kind of death spiral. Can you define the problem there and like what you can do in the state legislature to help?
Sure. So you went from a Minneapolis lens, not necessarily a Minnesota lens.
I mean, you're representing Minneapolis. You can go big picture or small picture.
Sure. So what I've heard in a lot of conversations is it was kind of a 1-2 punch for the Minneapolis public schools. First was the comprehensive redesign. A lot of folks in 61A had their kids redistricted to North High School, and parents decided for whatever reason that they would rather send their kids to St. Louis Park or Edina. And then the pandemic hit and everybody had at-home schooling, which was another reason for some parents to take their kids out of Minneapolis public schools and send them to other schools that weren't doing, that were doing in-person schooling. I think a lot of the thoughts around that were those kids will come back or parents will bring their kids back after the public health emergency ends. But that doesn't seem to have been the case. And so just even talking with some of my neighbors, they're saying that some class sizes, there's like this bubble moving its way through the public schools, that there's some small class sizes, but before it and after it are some larger class sizes. Solutions? I don't know any solutions. In my personal life, there's a lot of problems that I have that I could throw money at the problem and it would go away. I don't know if throwing money at the problem that Minneapolis Public Schools has will solve the problem. That's kind of the best I've got at this point. All I can keep doing is keep having conversations with people. Eventually there will be a good idea. And the great thing about running a campaign and eventually hopefully being an elected representative is hearing a good idea and socializing it as fast as I can.
Okay, let's talk about housing and some of the housing things that are going on in the state legislature right now. I'm sure you've heard of that bill to fix the state's environmental law, MIRA, which is being used to kind of delay the implementation and sidetrack the 2040 plan in Minneapolis. So do you support the fix in the state legislature to sort of exempt residential density as a way to kind of this is my editorializing here, but the bad faith lawsuit that's been used to hold up the 2040 plan, do you support the legislation to fix that?
And this is the one that came out, Sidney Jordan put out, right, that you're talking about?
I think she is a co-author on one of them, yeah.
Yeah. I think that fix is good. Exempting, it's essentially saying already developed, and so it exempts already developed spaces. I'm sure the words developed are defined in statute somewhere, telling you exactly what that means. And so if they were, let's say a developer were to buy a tract of five houses in a row on one block and tear them down, what length of time needs to pass or what we need to change to consider that undeveloped, that would unlock a different part of the law. I'd like to look into the difference between those two things. But as it stands now, it sounds like the parties that have come together and agreed that it's you know, a good compromise. I mean, I'm not party to it, but if the two sides are coming together on that compromise, I don't see anything wrong with that.
And in the same vein, the legislature has taken up a couple of housing and parking reform bills. One would eliminate parking minimums statewide, which we've already done in Minneapolis. Another one would legalize duplexes, fourplexes, depending on the size of the city, with density bonuses for things like affordable housing and sustainability. So you think those things are good ideas? Are those the kind of things you would support?
Some, yes. So obviously zoning, coming down from the state, zoning is really a local issue. Cities really set the rules for zonings. I'm not much in favor of, so if you're thinking about removing parking minimums, if we're thinking about a small community out in greater Minnesota, would that have much of an effect? I don't think it would really have much of an effect. Nobody's going to build a 600 unit building out in, you know, some small community that's going to, they're not going to have the space for parking. I don't think that really applies. But when you're telling, you know, like a Grand Rapids or something like that, I think Grand Rapids should be able to have their own zoning laws and say what they want. Coming down from the state, you know, I don't know if that's the best way to do that. Switching over to density, though, I am in favor of densifying. I think that what we've seen, for instance, in like in Uptown, taking some of the larger homes, turning them into duplexes or triplexes, I think that makes really good neighborhoods and neighborhoods worth living in. It's really hard to support small places like pizza shops, coffee shops, places like that, places that make a city worth living in. It's hard to make them viable if it's just in single-family home areas, and you can see that in some parts of the city. But fourplexes, it gets a little bit more complicated because then you get into federal regulations. So you probably know as soon as you get to new build fourplexes, it needs to be ADA compliant. And so I don't know if state law can override something like that.
So going back to the parking thing, it sounds like in a lot of this stuff, you just don't want the state going in and telling the locals how to operate.
That's accurate.
But I mean, personally, do you think Minneapolis eliminating parking minimums was a good idea?
You know, I think it works in some places. I don't think it works in all places.
Okay.
If I'm thinking about, so I used to live right in Uptown, and sometimes it was hard for me to find parking near my house, near my apartment. And so, you know, sometimes it was a 2-block walk, and we were a 1-car household. And so I took the bus most days when I was going to the U, and my wife drove everywhere. There comes a point where it almost becomes social engineering to say that, hey, we're going to eliminate all the parking and try to get you more on busing. And I understand, you know, something has to happen first. To get more people on buses, you need to have more buses, and then you need to have them frequent enough to make that worthwhile. I get that. But I don't know if that's the right place to break that wheel or to start that wheel.
You want to have a philosophical conversation? So you said social engineering, eliminating the requirement, but like if you're building some housing, a 10 unit building, a 50 unit building, it would be up to you then to decide how much parking you would build, the private party there. Wouldn't it be social engineering to require an arbitrary amount of parking that's not really based on anything other than like vibes?
I mean, yeah, it's social engineering on both sides in some way.
Yeah. Okay. So
I'm not saying that, like, you know, there's the traffic engineer's manual that is this unbesmirchable just set of rules that were established and are unquestionable. I'm not saying that at all. But you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of guy. I don't know what else to tell you.
Okay. So traffic enforcement cameras, another thing the state legislature has taken up this mm-hmm. year. Is that a good idea?
So I was reading about this today, about the 31 deaths that came, or would have been identifiable with those cameras. What I think really needs to be balanced with that are civil rights, with the cameras. So, can you be certain that the vehicle that's identified and the driver that's identified in that vehicle is the person that vehicle is registered to? Of course, out in public, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, but I think that also needs to come into the conversation of making sure that it's not just everything is being recorded all of the time.
Yeah. I think one of the things they're going to do is have it attached to the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to go on the driver's record. It's only going to be used similar to like parking enforcement. So just add that context.
Oh, I didn't know that context. Thank you.
So revitalizing Minneapolis, I mm-hmm. saw you talk about this a little bit on your website.
Sure.
What are the policy levers that you can push to reinvigorate commercial areas like uptown and downtown?
So I think one of the things could be tax increment financing. That's one option to get, you know, right now what's top of mind for me is like on Lake and Fremont. That's been vacant for a really long time. I think years and years ago, there was a pro wrestling match that was there. That was pretty good use of the space for that weekend. But if you're trying to get something built there, I mean, necessarily with TIF financing, it's if something is there is better than having nothing there. And I think that, you know, that's a good way to encourage development. I think one of the things that gets mentioned with downtown is, you know, there's a lot of large buildings that have nothing in them. And a lot of them aren't good conversion opportunities to housing. But the reason they're not good conversion opportunities is because all the mechanicals, you know, the plumbing and all that is in one space on the floors. But what that works really well for are single room occupancy buildings. And if we're thinking about SROs coming through the county, I think that makes some of those buildings, now not huge buildings, but six stories buildings, it makes those pretty good candidates to convert to SRO.
Homelessness. I don't know if we're coordinating well. You've got layers of government pointing at each other. City, a lot of people want the city to take on responsibility. Mayor Fry and his administration's response to that is we're not funded to be the social services agency, essentially, and pointing at the county. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you, going into the state legislature, like what would be your role to help the city do better on encampments?
Sure. So I have yet to hear ideas that solve the problem now. And so I don't have any ideas to socialize with you to solve the problem now. Instead, what really I can offer are ideas that will solve kind of some of the underlying problems. For example, I support a housing first approach. As soon as you get people into housing, no matter the cost it costs to get them into housing, you can coordinate care. They have a stable address, they have a stable home over their head. That's really where everything else flows from. And this kind of comes back to the healthcare thing, where I'm comfortable, is there are a lot of states using Section 1115 waivers for housing. And this would apply to that population. So what a lot of that is because it would be between 70 and 90% of the way funded by the federal government to provide health-related social needs to this population.
So public safety, similar question. It's on everyone's minds.
Man, you're going through these fast. Are you sure there's going to be a 45-minute interview?
It's definitely not. Like, you are super efficient. You're the most efficient guest Like, you don't filibuster. A lot of people will filibuster. You're not filibustering. All right. So I endorse Dylan McMahon as the non-filibustering guest. So,
can I clip that to just I endorse Dylan McMahon?
You can do whatever you want. Clip me out of context. I would be honored to be clipped out of context. So public safety. Sure. Another thing that is on everyone's mind, do you have any policy levers to push on public safety? Do you have a public safety agenda that you take into the state legislature?
Sure. I don't have an agenda. The best things that I have are what I really want to see funded are... So if we're thinking about Minneapolis, it's a lot of people are looking for solutions now. Carjackings happen now. Shootings happen now. And a lot of that is through the mayor's office. Mayor's office owns public safety now with the restructuring of the city government structure. From the state legislature, what I would want to do is either pre-event funding for things, I'll get more into the things, or post-event. So pre-event, what I'm thinking of with that is programming. I see Boys and Girls Club being something to fund, being a really good resource. I used to go to Boys and Girls Club. I would go to track practice after school, and I'd have to hang out at Boys and Girls Club until I got picked up by my parents. Another thing close to me is Outward Bound, if you've ever heard of Outward Bound. It's for kids at risk of being at risk. And it's essentially saying, hey, you are from this hardscape, cityscape. Why don't we take you out into the woods, teach you how to climb a tree, teach you how to canoe, things like that. And I think getting out of your environment to somewhere entirely different is a great learning experience. So that's sort of before event things that I really support. Post event things are things like culturally competent counseling. There was some, I was talking with a couple people, and they were saying there's some good stuff coming out of the legislature last session, but they want to see more of that. Specifically, what I've heard about is trauma counseling that you can be assigned. Some trauma counseling, I could track my notes, but some trauma counseling requires 90 to 100 days of sobriety before you can receive that trauma counseling. Which, how can you recover from trauma, but you have to be sober first, and maybe the reason you're not sober is because you haven't recovered from that trauma. Is 120 days the right amount of time? Probably not. Is 5 days the right amount of time? I don't know, but I would like to hear from people who are much smarter than me on that topic. Maybe let's think about changing that amount of time required for sobriety before you can receive the trauma counseling. So it's a lot of pre and post is what I have opinions on. I don't know if as a state legislator that you can do things that will have an impact now and today.
Okay, Dylan McMahon. Do you know the problem with candidates these days? Aside from all the filibustering answers that they give, taking up all my time on these Wedge Live podcast episodes. The problem is they're all saying the same thing. You go to the websites, all these DFL candidates for anything, and it's impossible to differentiate them. So here is your chance. I think there's four, as of now, four total candidates running for 61A. How are you different? How would you conduct yourself differently? Why are you better? Why are you better suited for this job than the rest of them? Why are you unique?
Sure. To get to your first point, that it's hard to differentiate, it's because we're all DFLers. We agree on 98% of everything already. So that last 2%, I think what makes me different from the other candidates is... I think I might be the only person with private sector experience or more than a couple of years of private sector experience. I come with a finance background. I don't think any of the other candidates come with a finance background. I've built up profit loss statements. I've seen sources of revenue. I've had to make things balance. It's all private sector stuff. But I think what differentiates me as a candidate most is that I'm really more focused on health and wealth. I of course don't want to minimize the things that other candidates are putting first. Those things are also important. I could stand to learn more about climate. When I'm talking with people on the doors and talking with people on the phones, that is also top of mind. And if elected, it has to be something I would have to learn really fast. But focusing on healthcare, where I'm comfortable, it's where I retreat to when I want to have a conversation and not be wrong about anything, is healthcare is 40% of the state's budget, and healthcare is needlessly complicated, and it's a long on-ramp to learn the language of healthcare and how to make changes in healthcare, and I would need the shortest amount of time to get up to speed on that 40% of the state's budget. So I think those are the things that separate me from the other candidates.
Is there anything that we should be talking about? Because I'm pretty much at the end of my list, almost. Is there anything you really want to talk about that you don't think I'm giving enough attention to here?
You know, one of the things that I notice mostly when being in like neighborhood meetings and being in the SD meetings is sometimes there's this us and them between normal human beings and elected representatives. There's almost like this heart palpitation, oh, my favorite representative, I'm going to go see him. We're all just normal people. We all have gone to work. We all shop at the same grocery stores. You know, there's no class difference. I don't think we talk enough about how just everybody's a normal human being, and we're all just kind of winging it through life with varying degrees of success.
I couldn't agree more. Especially that's what I like about local politics is that the person who represents you on the city council is the person who lives like down the street from you. They're your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And like Minnesota House districts are also about council ward sized, I think, maybe a little bigger, but they're your neighbor and they don't know what they're doing. Not in an insulting way, but they are normal people who are relying on other people to tell them, you know, to advise them what's good. So you're electing people with good judgment. They're not superhuman.
Right. And the thing with the state legislature specifically, as compared to city council members, it's a part-time job. This is probably the longest and hardest I will ever interview for a part-time job.
Yeah. Why do it, Dylan McMahon?
The reason I wanted to do it and the reason I jumped in is because I, spent a lot of time in SD61 doing party development, doing community development. I felt like I have a really good pulse on that district. And when I went around and with a couple people just threw out names of people we thought might run, I don't know if anybody knew the district better than I did. And so I didn't say that. I was asked to run. I didn't come out and say, well, maybe I should do this. I thought, of course, nobody gets into DFL stuff without thinking, oh, I could someday do that. I just didn't think it would be this year.
Do you have any recommendations? I always ask this question. It's very wide open. It could be anything you enjoy, a hobby, a place, a book, a movie that you could recommend to the audience that you think more people should know about and enjoy.
Sure. I'm going to move my camera here for a second. 2005 album, LCD Sound System, the eponymous album. Highly recommend you go back and listen to that. Daft Punk is playing at my house, Tribulations. I've been having that on repeat for the last couple weeks.
You're recommending an album from 2005?
Yeah.
Okay.
It shows that I might be older than I actually am. Is that helpful?
Yeah, sure. Are you, okay. So when you talk to people, are you... You're making phone calls. I don't know. Are people judging you on age? Or are they saying you seem too young or you seem too this? Do people have preconceived notions?
That is actually a question that I get asked on the calls is a lot of the times, you know, if we think about current city council members that are representing this area, I think they're all under 30. And so I do get that question is they want to know how old I am. And the age that I am is... Usually, if you're going to try this thing for the first time, it's usually the age you try it at the first time.
Yeah, I find that people are very suspicious of young people these days.
That's fine. They were young once, too.
It's true.
Can I turn the question back on you, actually?
What yes, would you make recommend? Me the interviewee. Do it.
I mean, I've fallen 4 weeks behind on my podcast. I've fallen 4 weeks behind on my reading. But if I'm going to add something to the stack, what do you recommend? Movies,
oh,
podcasts.
Geez. You're turning
books.
The recommendation thing back around on me? Oh, I didn't realize how hard a question that was until now. I don't know. The answer I always give is take a walk around Cedar Lake. Take a walk someplace. What podcast am I enjoying? Here's a very recent one. The, The thing I do to relax is there's this, it's called the Fall of Civilizations podcast. It's also on YouTube, and I find that the visuals for that are very good, but it's like 3 hour long episodes about like the Carthaginians or the, I'm guessing the Romans have also been featured, all of these various civilizations. And I usually will fall asleep after 15 minutes of listening to it, but it's very good. I also occasionally would get hooked watching it on the TV, but,
That's not like a Dan Carlin thing, is it?
What's Dan Carlin?
He does like hardcore history stuff.
Oh no. I've listened to some of that, but it's a more like subdued listen, like basically just walk you through the whole thing from the rise to the fall of these various civilizations. And it's either, you will either be very, very entertained or it will do a great job putting you to sleep. So right. That's my recommendation.
Fall of Civilization?
Fall of Civilizations podcast, also on YouTube. So if you have time to like put your eyeballs on something, you could also bring it up on YouTube.
Cool.
Well, thank you, Dylan Thomas, for being the only guest that's ever considered my feelings.
Oh, damn, you're throwing out my middle name. All right.
Did I throw out your middle name?
Yeah. So I think my mom was going through like a poetry phase. And so I'm named after the Welsh poet.
Okay. Well, Dylan McMahon is running for Minnesota House in District 61A. Thank you for being here. This is the Wedge Live Podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. Thanks to everyone for listening.
This is a real thing. Real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
Today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. 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 Right now.